Joe, join me in a moment of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer, please. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Last week, when we were talking, and our tape ran out just as we were talking about the idea that for the alcoholic, you know, sobriety is the problem. Thought we'd just spend a couple of minutes here, maybe explain that a little bit more, or don't want to leave somebody hanging there. You know, for any alcoholic, for myself, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I wanted to stay sober. I knew that continuing to drink was not going to be a good thing for me. I wanted to stop drinking, and how in the world do I stay sober? And sobriety was probably the number one thing in my mind. You know, I want sobriety, and I want to know how to stay sober. But yet, I already knew from my own experience that after being sober for an extended period of time, sooner or later, I always ended up going back to drinking. I didn't understand why. And as we get into the book and start going through AA's description of the alcoholic, you know, we'll make all that stuff very clear. But I can share, you know, from my own experience, there were times that I had drank for the specific purpose of attempting to preserve my sanity. You know, life and the pain of life and the frustration, the fears and the guilts and the shame, remorse, and all that yucky, dirty stuff, that bag of rocks that most of us drug around for so long. You know, those things would bear down on me and just get so heavy, and I just couldn't handle it anymore. And for fear of going insane, you know, going off the deep end, for fear of committing suicide. Now, I was never one that was suicidal per se. I'm one who thought about it a lot, or I should say I thought about it from time to time, but I never would have, I can't see myself being the kind of person, never would have had the courage to do that. I'm too much of a baby, too much of a wimp, you know, inflicting pain upon myself just wouldn't, I don't think I could have done that. But the idea that that life was unbearable, that's what we're talking about. When an alcoholic in his or her natural state is sober, and let me emphasize, or let me turn that around, when an alcoholic is sober in his or her natural state, life eventually becomes unbearable. That word S-O-B-E-R, I don't know what word to substitute on the B here, but you know, son of a something or another, everything's real, you know, son of a barn burner, everything's real. At S-O-B-E-R, sober. Sober just wasn't. Sober was something I wanted, but sober was something I couldn't stand. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I came here thinking that I was going to have to put sobriety ahead of everything else. And I was confused at first. It took a while for this to kind of sink in, for me to begin to understand it. But in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was encouraged to place recovery above everything else. You know, this idea of first things first that we talk about is about recovery first. And to really go past that, it's about spiritual things first. Because for people like us, once we learn to live life on a spiritual basis, we recover from that hopelessness of that mess we were living in. And once we recover from the hopelessness of that mess we were living in, sobriety, if you will, is a piece of cake. And so the whole idea, and I can show that to you, just take a quick look on page 143. There's a paragraph in the middle of the page that the last two sentences describe this, some of what I've been saying here. It says, to get over drinking will require a transformation of thought and attitude. And that's our thought and attitude about life and our approach to life and so on, as we'll see once we get more into the book. And it says, we all had to place recovery above everything, for without recovery, we would have lost both home and business because we couldn't have stayed sober. And that's what that amounts to. And so, for someone who wants to stay sober, oh yes, yes, there is a way for an alcoholic to stay sober. But in Alcoholics Anonymous, we don't stay sober by trying to stay sober. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we stay sober by recovering from the hopelessness of alcoholism. And so that no one misunderstands, whenever you hear me use the word recovering, I mean becoming recovered. Once we become recovered from that hopelessness or that mess, sobriety is something that is quite bearable and can be quite enjoyable. We don't have to go back to drinking again. In the last couple of meetings, we've talked about how this message that we have today, how it got started or where it came from and so on. You know, we know looking back, we can read, the history tells us that a couple of men from one of the Oxford groups came to Ebbie Thatcher and offered Ebbie Thatcher with a judge kind of helping convince Ebbie he might want to give it a try. A couple of men offered Ebbie Thatcher a simple religious idea, the idea of dependence on God, the idea of having a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening, many different words we use today. But they offered Ebbie this simple religious idea and a practical program of action. You know, some steps to take, if you will. We didn't call them the steps back then, but later on we came to call them the steps. We know that Ebbie carried this message to Bill. Ebbie went to Bill and told him about the spiritual program of action that brought about this spiritual change, whatever this thing was, that Ebbie didn't have to drink anymore. One thing that's different between Ebbie and Bill is that Ebbie had not heard of the hopelessness of alcoholism, at least not as clearly as Bill had heard it from Dr. Silkworth. And see, Bill knew that he was hopeless. And when Ebbie offered him a solution, you know, he grabbed onto it because he saw that it obviously worked in Ebbie. You know, Bill in turn went to Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob had already been trying the same program of action that had worked for Ebbie and for Bill, but Dr. Bob was unable to stay sober. He was unable to recover, if you will. And when Bill explained the hopeless feature of alcoholism, I find it interesting to note that it was a stockbroker from New York who explained alcoholism to a medical doctor. I'll not comment about that any further, or I'll start bashing somebody. You don't want to do that, you understand. But here we got a stockbroker explaining alcoholism to a medical doctor. I wonder if that could happen today, and if it might not be helpful to some people. But we do know that once Dr. Bob, in the forward to the second edition of our book, it tells us that once Dr. Bob had heard the hopeless feature, and once he understood that hopelessness, he then began to pursue the very same spiritual remedy that he had already tried, the same remedy that had worked for Bill W. and for Ebbie Thatcher. And he began to pursue that very same remedy with a willingness he had never before been able to muster. And I think that's interesting. The driving home that hopeless feature of alcoholism is something that's very important. Bill and Dr. Bob, in turn, went to Bill D., AA number 3. And it was interesting that in reading the story about Bill D., AA number 3, in the back of our book, there's that place there where Dr. Bob had said to Bill W., if you and I are going to stay sober, we better get busy, trying to help somebody else. I'm not one who's real big on presenting the idea that if we don't try to help other alcoholics, we're going to end up drinking. I'm not one who's real big on that kind of cause and effect, and I'll just kind of leave that alone. But this I do know. Any alcoholic who has found this solution is going to want to try to help other alcoholics. And so whether Dr. Bob was worried about getting drunk if he didn't try to help other people, or whether, as he later told us, he just simply wanted to go try to help others, we know that Dr. Bob encouraged Bill, to go about helping other alcoholics. On page 154 in our basic text, we find out that was Bill's initial motive, for going to Dr. Bob, this desire to want to try to help other alcoholics. This is the part where Bill's in the hotel lobby. He's had a rather bad day, a bad week, his whole life is a mess. He's been sober 6 months and standing there in that hotel lobby trying to decide, is he going to go for the bar or is he going to go for that church directory and try to find some other alcoholic or somebody to help? And at the last couple paragraphs on page 154, it says, of course, he couldn't drink. He knew he couldn't drink safely. He didn't want to drink. But why not sit, hopefully, at a table with a bottle of ginger ale before him? He thought, maybe I can go in there and just get a bottle of ginger ale. strike up a conversation with somebody. After all, had he not been sober 6 months now? I mean, can you hear that alcoholic mind working? I've been sober 6 months, for heaven's sake. I can go drink a bottle of ginger ale and look for somebody to talk to. But then right after that, or right along with that, here's that parallel thinking that goes through the alcoholic's mind sometimes. Perhaps he could handle, say, 3 drinks. Oh, but no more. You know, just maybe 3 drinks I could handle. And fear gripped him. He says he was on thin ice again. That old insidious insanity, you know, that temptation was right there, staring him in the face, that first drink, that insanity that precedes the first drink. I think that we can prove that Bill was not insane as far as alcohol is concerned at this particular time. I think we can prove that Bill was tempted by the thought of taking a couple of drinks, looking for some relief from the pain or whatever it was he was suffering, whatever he was feeling at that particular time. But the fact is, Bill recognized his insanity about to happen. Now, that's a sane person. See, he had been restored to sanity concerning alcohol. And when the temptation, when the thought of drink, you know, came back for whatever reason, that's not the insanity returning. That's just the temptation, the thought of a drink, you know, coming to mind. Happened to me yesterday. You know, it's no big deal. The thought of a drink passes through her mind once in a while. But Bill had been restored to sanity. But as far as sanity concerning alcohol was concerned, Bill had it. And he saw the insanity that it would be, or he saw how insane it would be for him to drink. And he said, no, I don't want to drink. And I got to find some action to take against my thinking. I got to take some action against the way I'm feeling. I got to find something to do to take action against what's going on in my mind at this very moment. It says, with a shiver, he turned away and walked down the lobby to the church directory. Music and gay chatter still floated to him from the bar. All the way down that lobby, he sees that church directory down there, and he can just hear them people singing and just having a good time back here in the bar, you know what I mean? But here's his mind. See, his mind's still thinking, and he's still rolling this thing around. He says, oh, but what about his responsibilities? You know, in other words, if he ended up drinking, what about his responsibilities, his family? And listen to this. What about the men who would die because they would not know how to get well? You know, yes, those other alcoholics. There must be many such in this town. So he decided to phone a clergyman, phone somebody, look for somebody to try to help. I don't know, you could call Bill a visionary, you could call Bill an arrogant egotist, call him whatever you want. Bill Wilson had the idea that if I don't try to help other alcoholics, a whole bunch of them are going to die. What about those other alcoholics that aren't ever going to get well, never get their chance, if I don't do something right here and right now? And as I shared one time before, in Bill's original manuscript, in the third person, he wrote this about himself. He said, little could he foresee what that simple decision was to mean. How could anyone guess that life and happiness for many was to depend on whether one depressed man entered a phone booth or a bar? And sometimes, you know, we think we're so insignificant. And in the reality of things, my first sponsor told me, if you think you're so important, just shove your fist down in a bucket of water, pull it out quickly, and check the size of the hole that's left. That's probably how much of an impression you're going to leave on this earth, you know, once you're gone from here. But the idea that things we do don't matter, the idea that, oh, it doesn't make a difference, I can't make a difference, you know, I personally believe that's a lie that comes from wherever lies come from. You know, here was one guy standing all by himself in a hotel lobby, and he didn't know what difference it would make for other people if he drank or didn't drink or phoned the clergyman or didn't phone the clergyman. But the thought went through his mind, well, if I don't phone and look for somebody to try to help, what about all those people that'll never get their chance to get well? And he had no way of knowing they were going to, unless that's something God told him back there in detox in his lightning bolt experience, you know, and he just never told us about it. Who knows? But nonetheless, here we are, trying to share the idea that that Bill was a man who felt the necessity. He was driven, if you will, to try to help other alcoholics. And he evidently instilled that in Dr. Bob, because after he helped Dr. Bob, it was a short time later that Dr. Bob said, if you and I are going to stay sober, we better get busy. And so they got busy about trying to help AA number 3. And those guys in turn went along and helped AA number 4. That's where we see Alcoholics Anonymous kind of getting started. Let's go over to page 159. And I want to correct something I just said. I don't know if that's where we see Alcoholics Anonymous getting started. Alcoholics Anonymous counts its, or considers its beginning from the day that day of Dr. Bob's last drink. You know, once Dr. Bob had recovered, once we had 2 recovered alcoholics, Alcoholics Anonymous considers its beginning, its inception from there. And that may be true for AA, the institution that it's become. But the idea of carrying a message of recovery got started sometime before that. It turns out that there were 2 people that weren't even alcoholics that carried a message of recovery to Ebby. Ebby carried a message of recovery to Bill. So I'm not so sure that when AA got started is really the point here. But the point is that there came a time where somehow an alcoholic heard a message from not only from a power greater than himself, but from a source outside of himself. It wasn't even alcoholics that first told Ebby about it, and Ebby to Bill and so on, like I said. We'll get off that and probably talk about that more as time goes on anyway. But on page 159, it says, all this time, and all this time is talking about the time that it took them for the first 4 of them. You know, Ebby, then Bill, then Dr. Bob, then Bill D., and then number 4, the Devil May Care chap. And I think that's the same story that you read on the last couple pages of chapter 4, you know, the minister's son who thought he had had an overdose of religion. And all this time, our friend of the hotel lobby incident, that's Bill W., remained in that town. He was there for 3 months. So it took 3 months for Bill and Bob and next 2 guys, the 4 of them, end up being together. He now returned home, so Bill went home, leaving his first acquaintance, Dr. Bob, the lawyer, Bill D., and the Devil May Care chap, the guy from chapter 4. These men had found something brand new in life. They knew they must help other alcoholics if they would remain sober. And see, this idea that we must help others in order to stay sober. I think it's safe to say that we're the kind of people who must get out of ourselves and practice constant thought of others, or else we're going to end up thinking about ourselves and practicing constant thought of self. Now, I can't speak for anybody here but myself, but I can tell you that when I practice constant thought of me and how I can get my needs met, I get depressed real quick. So I can understand that if I'm going to stay sober, I must help other people. I must think about somebody besides me. So I'm not so sure that the idea that if I don't help alcoholics, God's going to make me get drunk. I don't think that can be defended. But the idea that if I'm to stay sober, I must think of others, constant thought of others. And if I don't, only thing left, you know, by default, is me thinking about me. And me thinking about me and all my little petty problems and all my pains. And I don't mean to say petty problems, but me thinking about me and all that self-pity and all that poor me and all that stuff. You know, poor me, always sets off a convulsion of the elbow. You know, pretty soon it's pour me a drink. And these guys knew that they must help others if they would remain sober, middle of 159 again. It says that motive became secondary. So even if it's a selfish motive so that I don't have to drink, or it's a selfish motive for whatever, that motive's going to become secondary. And it says here it was transcended by the happiness they found in giving themselves for others. And they shared their homes and so on. I read this a week or so ago, I think. They grew in numbers. Reading at the end of that same paragraph, they experienced a few distressing failures. But in those cases, they made an effort to bring the man's family, or the alcoholic's family, into a spiritual way of living, an interesting thought, thus relieving much worry and suffering. A year and 6 months later, these 3 had succeeded with 7 more. So now, if I'm adding my numbers up correctly, we're just shy of 2 years, right at about 2 years. And it looks like there's a grand total of about 11 of them. And of course, by this time, Bill's back in New York, and some other things have been happening. And I'm not sure where I heard this number, but I believe that by this time, we're somewhere around 40 or so recovered alcoholics beginning to be recognized as this thing that we later came to call Alcoholics Anonymous, because Dr. Bob and his crew were there in Akron. You know, Bill was back in New York with the people he had helped and whatever group got started there. I'm not real well informed on AA history. I can't tell you where Cleveland came into the picture and so on and so forth. But we know somewhere around 2 or 3 years, you know, into this recovery message being carried deal that we got going, we know there's somewhere around 40 or so recovered alcoholics. And it was about this time that people decided, you know, let's write this thing down. Again, our primary purpose, I think it's important to clarify that our primary purpose is something that relates to our autonomous groups. Each group has but one primary purpose. But the only way any group can fulfill its primary purpose of carrying the AA message is if its individual members do so. And so the idea that here we have these first 30, 40 AA members, we have some people who know that in the face of nearly 3,000 years of experience, there is a way for alcoholics to recover, no matter what anybody says. In a world where so many experts say there's no such thing as recovered, nobody can ever recover, there is no real hope for the alcoholic. The best the alcoholic can do is to hope he can don't drink one day at a time, and we know we can't do that. That's why we're here. In the face of all that expert opinion to the contrary, we know there is hope. We know that alcoholics can recover. And just as those people, you know, some 60 years ago, you know, knew that they had a message that few people knew that they had a message that few other people could carry to another alcoholic, whether it was from some kind of ego that said, watch us go forth and conquer the world as far as alcoholism is concerned, whether it was some sense of duty that Dr. Bob mentions, whatever the motive was, these people wanted to go help other alcoholics, even if it was for nothing other than they knew they had to think about somebody besides themselves if they wanted to stay sober. And they decided an alcoholic might just be good enough, we'll go think about them, however you want to say that. So here these people are, you know, wanting to carry this message. Over on page 19, let's go first to the bottom of page 17. Just a quick point here. We'll elaborate on this much more in just a few weeks once we get up here in the book. Bottom of page 17, that last little paragraph. It says, the tremendous fact for every one of us. Now, these are those first 30, 40 AA members speaking, and actually by the time the book was written, there were about 100 of them. The tremendous fact for every one of our earliest AA members is that they say, we have discovered a common solution. It doesn't say we have 100 solutions for the 100 of us, and we agree to disagree when we don't like what somebody else says or does. They don't say that. They say, we have discovered a common solution. We have one solution. And it seems to be this simple religious idea, this idea of dependence on God, this idea of a spiritual awakening, a spiritual experience, whatever you want to call it. And they say, we have a way out. Now that's the program of action. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree. And again, they don't say, well, we have a way out on which most of us agree some of the time, and we agree to disagree the rest of the time. Now, none of that nonsense here. We have a practical program of action, and we agree. Our experience has proven to each of us that when we follow this practical program of action, we recover from alcoholism through having some kind of vital spiritual experience, you know, like we were told that we had to have. And that came from the medical profession. The medical profession said, you guys are going to have to get a vital spiritual experience or you're dead. That's what it's going to take to recover. And so reading on, they say, you know, we have a way out on which we can absolutely agree. See, we've already seen we have one solution, the spiritual angle. We have one program on which we can absolutely agree, and look at this one, and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. As we go through our book, we're going to see they're talking about the autonomous AA group. Not only do we have a solution that we know brings about recovery, we have a practical program of action that applies the solution to the problem that we have. And on top of that, we join together in our autonomous AA groups in this spiritual fellowship, and we do that in a brotherly and harmonious action. No arguing, no debating, no hitting on each other about this and that and our, you know, all that nonsense that goes on in so many circles today. These people say, we got something different. And I'm willing to say that I think they probably could have added, and the rest of you world, the rest of you people in the world, pay attention. You've never seen like this before in your life. That last sentence said, this is the great news this book carries. Now, we haven't actually gotten to the book yet and where the book comes into this picture, but the news that we carry is the news that's in our book. The message we carry is the message that comes out of our book. And the message that our book carries is that we have one solution. We have one program of action. And that together in our autonomous AA groups, we help each other apply the solution to the problem and grow together in spiritual fellowship. And as we go through the book again, you know, we're going to be seeing that kind of stuff. Over on 19, just flip a page. If we keep on the way we are going. At the time, they were carrying the message by word of mouth only. And when they say the way we are going, that's what they're talking about. If we keep on carrying this message by word of mouth, one alcoholic to another, they say, there is little doubt that much good will result, but the surface of the problem would hardly be scratched. Those of us who live in large cities are overcome by the reflection that close by, hundreds are dropping into oblivion every day. Many could recover if they have the opportunity we have enjoyed. How then shall we present that which has been so freely given us? Here are these guys. Bill Wilson says, I better not take a drink, because if I do, what about all them people that will never get help? Dr. Bob says, you and I better get busy if we're going to stay sober. And those guys got busy, and a couple of years later, we got 30 or 40 recovered alcoholics. And these guys say, wow, how can we get this message out? How can we get this message out to help more people? And reading again, they say, we have concluded to publish an anonymous volume. We're going to keep us out of it. We're just going to share our experience. And it says, we're going to set forth the problem as we see it. We're not going to define it medically. We're going to describe ourselves as alcoholics. And we'll bring to the task our combined experience and knowledge. And this should suggest a useful program for anyone concerned with the drinking problem. And next week, we're going to start right at the front of the book, and we're going to find out just exactly how they do that, sharing their experience, strength, and hope. When we took our break, Chris pointed out to me that didn't quite finish reading where we were there on page 154. I had made a statement that at this particular time where Bill's standing in the hotel lobby, he was not insane as far as alcohol was concerned. And I want you to know that it was not my intent to get into that technical discussion of whether Bill was sane or insane or so on. Our book talks about that for us alcoholics, you know, the temptation of the thought of a drink can come in, and it can run parallel with our sound reasoning. The sound reasoning says it's not a good idea for me to take a drink. The insane idea says it's a good idea for me to take a drink. And with those two thoughts running parallel together in our minds, our book shares with us that through experience we know that willpower will not be sufficient to overcome that insane idea, even though we really do know better. willpower isn't going to be enough to make the difference. And so the idea is that the insane idea of taking a drink is something we're looking for a way to keep that from taking over, from being the one that actually gets done. I made the statement that in this hotel lobby, Bill was not actually insane as far as alcohol is concerned. The bottom line on page 154 goes on in telling this story, and the words, "his sanity returned," appear there. So whether he was sane or insane, or whether the insane idea was running in his mind, or what, all that stuff wasn't the thing I was trying to get into. Just the simple fact that Bill knew that he had to depend on this higher power, he had to depend on God, whatever his conception might have been, so that his willpower would not have to be called upon to make the difference between drinking or not drinking. And maybe later on sometime we can pick this apart. Just at a quick glance, I think the way that he put this paragraph together on the bottom of 154 shows us that the fact that his sanity returned, that statement is made after he decided to phone the clergyman looking for help. So I think there's a definite spiritual connection there, you know, that Bill was trying to make. And point being that if I said something that was not technically correct, it was not my point to do that. The point was that here Bill was facing that insanity, and by the grace of God, he didn't have to drink. It wasn't because he decided not to drink. He thought about somebody other than himself. What about those other people, you know, if I drink? Let's go to the title page of our book. So then again, during that break, I was reminded that it's probably the second time I've said we'll get into our book next time. So the very least we're going to do is hit the title page real quick, and then we'll have some discussion. Title page of our book says Alcoholics Anonymous at the top. And then it says the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. And I think it's important for us to understand that this book is the story that is described right here on the title page. This is the book that tells the story of how these people recovered, of how they did that. It's not a book of theory about alcoholism, meant to describe alcoholism in any technical sense. It's not a book that it's a theory about treatment for the alcoholic, you know, meant to be the latest plan, you know, or latest treatment model that somebody came up with. This book is simply the story of what these people did to recover from alcoholism. And it's important to know, we've already said it a couple of times, that it's so important to know that this is after, but 2,934 years. You know, it was in 1934 when the message that we now call Alcoholics Anonymous, the AA message, was first carried to Abby Thatcher. The AA message was being carried before AA ever got started. And Abby, in turn, carried the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to Bill Wilson. And Bill Wilson carried the AA message to Dr. Bob. And then, we say AA got started from that point on. When AA got started isn't the point. The point is that a message came, and a message started being carried, and that message is contained in this book, because this is the story of how all of those people recovered. Even though Ebby's story does not appear in this book tells the story of how Ebby recovered. Bill's story and Dr. Bob's and the other people's stories are in this book. And this book tells the story of how these people recovered. And as we talked about just a little bit ago, these people knew that they had a message. It was no longer we think we might have a solution, as we know that there is a solution. And it wasn't about, well, we think if you do this, something might happen. They knew they had a program of action. And they were already joined together, you know, in spiritual fellowship with one another, encouraging each other to try to grow daily along spiritual lines, and encouraging each other to help carry this message to still more alcoholics.
I'm Chris, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Chris.
Something I had read in the past, and I think it was in AA Comes of Age, is the logo that's on some of the books at Recovery Service and Unity. You know how important this is, but it kind of reflects on what we were talking about earlier. Bill Wilson had stated that without recovery, which is the bottom leg of this triangle, there would be no service and there would be no unity. And when I first came into AA, I got the impression that people were taking service as the top priority. And not intentionally, I don't know, but putting like recovery on the back burner, or somehow that was going to magically happen by being active in service, and that service being chairing a meeting, cleaning up ashtrays or coffee pots after a meeting, or helping make coffee or something like that, which I found over a period of time that there's absolutely, I'm sure there's nothing wrong with that, making a person feel part of, getting them active in feeling that like they're part of something that's going on here instead of feeling like an outsider. But in my case, and I definitely saw it, that recovery was not the main issue there, and brought about a whole lot of suffering on my part, because I was under the impression that service was it.
I think the thing is, and as you pointed out, you know, recovery is the base of that triangle. Another way to say that, everything we have here is dependent upon recovery first. The idea that the AA message is a message of service, no, it's not a message of service. And the AA message is not a message of unity, although those of us who have recovered are unified in what message we do carry. And the message that we do carry is a message of recovery. And that's the base of what we're doing here. We have a message that alcoholics can recover. Our message is that we have recovered, and our book tells the story that we have recovered. And what Chris is saying, certainly all of us when we come here are encouraged to get involved. If it's helping to make coffee and move chairs and empty ashtrays, if you could smoke, you know, and all that kind of stuff, that's all good stuff. But see, there's nothing special about that. Those are things we should be doing in all of our affairs on a day-to-day basis. At work, we got a break room. You know, six guys use it, and it gets pretty grungy in there. And we all take turns being of service, emptying ashtrays and moving chairs and making coffee. And we do that right there in our break room every day at work. Ain't nobody getting well because of it. We're all still a bunch of sick goofs at work there. And I'll include myself, because I get right in that stuff with them sometimes. I did today, you know what I'm saying? So those service things that we do, those are all good things. But there's nothing special about those. And they don't bring about recovery. So we're not carrying a message of service. And our mothers taught us to do that. Those of us who paid attention, you know, our mothers tried to teach us to make our bed and so on. Our message is one of recovery. Go ahead.
I'm glad I'm a recovered alcoholic.
All right, Glenn. Speak up a little bit, Glenn.
That idea of putting my concentration on service to others is a denial of the power of God in my life. I'm deciding what I need to do and what's best for me, and I did that for 4 or 5 years in AA and was miserable and drank half that time, and found out that wouldn't work. I got tired of doing these things for other people, and something that jogged my memory about that was that on page 52 it talks about how we had a feeling of uselessness, we were full of fear, we were unhappy, we couldn't be of real help to other people. And I found that those things are true when my idea of service is based on what I think I need to do for you. Because there's all kinds of assumptions there. And like I said, I'm not asking God what I should do for you, I'm deciding for myself. And so it's a complete denial, like I said, of the power of God. You know, a book says it's not the idea of giving, but when and how to give. Ask him what I should do for other people. That's the thing. And when carrying this message, I have found a life that has meaning and purpose, and I have found that I can be of real help to other people, and that's where the joy is at. what I did. It's in putting my ideas and saying, okay, God, what can I do with this? How can I help people? And asking for help and admitting that I only got the answers, that they were given to me. I didn't come up with anything. And all that stuff, and that's real neat how that works, because they found the same thing. They wrote it down. Those people that wrote this book, they said the same thing. We read that earlier. The joy of giving is what really helps us, is what really, you know, makes the difference in our lives. That's the thing that has transcended the idea of just carrying the message.
Sure. And the idea, if I'm hearing you right, the idea is that when we make our own decisions as to how we want to be of service, to prove something to somebody, or to feel like we fit in, or to feel like we belong, or feel like our life has meaning and purpose, when we do those things for that reason in and of itself, we're still depending on self to bring about the change we're looking for.
Exactly.
And as my sponsor clearly pointed out, self simply cannot overcome self. So the idea is that if, in depending on God, there's some of these things we do that are service type things. But in depending on God, we ask Him for the courage and the strength we need to do those things for the sakes of others, not for the sake of self. By being of service to God and others is for being of service to God and others. I don't be of service to God and others in order to serve myself, but we don't do that.
Mm-hmm. Goes back to that third step prayer. It says, take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help.
Sure.
Not so I can be okay and feel okay about myself.
Sure. And we share that without denying the selfish motive for doing so. Exactly. We want to feel okay ourselves. We want to be able to stay sober. We know that we can't stay sober unless we recover. And if we recover, we're going to feel good about ourselves and be able to stay sober. But the whole idea, it's in that getting out of self and trying to be of service to others and doing that in the way that we believe God would have us do that. As opposed to, another idea that we hear sometimes is we get the idea that if I jump through enough hoops, then God will bless me. Now, I can tell you that my first 30-some years of life, I jumped through just about every hoop that somebody put in front of me, thinking there was going to be a blessing on the other side. And in fairness, sometimes there seemed to be. But in the end, I couldn't jump through enough hoops. I couldn't jump through them fast enough. I couldn't keep up the pace anymore. And it just wasn't working. And we'll, more and more as we actually get in, start talking about the recovery program and the things that take place in the steps, we're going to pick some of that stuff apart pretty good and clarify it.
My name's Brian, and I'll call it.
Hey, Brian.
Hi, Brian.
The point that Chris was trying to bring about was that the thing that recovery is the bottom of that triangle is the fact is, if you're going to build something, you have to have a firm foundation to build on. Without that firm foundation of recovery through God, nothing can be built that's going to last any kind of a lifetime. Those things are just going to crumble and fall away. And that's when we always wind up. That's where I wound up before. I always wound up drinking over that stuff because I had nothing to stand on. And that's why recovery has to come first. And it's brought about through the process of the steps, and getting that relationship with God that makes it possible for me to even be of service to anybody or to unify with anybody. There's no way possible for that to happen.
See, it's that little bit that we read from the bottom of page 17. It talks about that. We have discovered a common solution. Well, that's the idea of a spiritual awakening, a spiritual experience, the idea of dependence on God, that simple religious idea that was presented to Abby and to Bill and so on. And once we all understand that it's our own natural state. Our natural states, our alcoholic state, our alcoholism, a lot of different ways to express that. But it's our alcoholism that drives us to a point that we have to admit powerlessness. And since no human being, ourselves included, have the power to bring about recovery. We have no option but to turn to this, we have discovered a common solution. The solution that was presented to us from the medical fraternity, who said, you're going to have a vital spiritual experience. But there's no hope, you know, for people like us. That's what was told to us. And once we accept that, then we don't have to split hairs over the program of action that's going to bring that about. See?
Right.
Once we acknowledge that there is but one God who created us, and it's that God that we're going to have to turn to. Now, our conceptions of that God may vary greatly from person to person. But our book clearly says there is one who has all God. There's one who has all power. That one is God. Now, 60 years ago when AA got started and somebody said, there is one who has all power, everybody chimed in, yep, and that's God. Because everybody knew who they were talking about. Anymore, you say, there is one who has all power, and people say, well, who are you talking about? There's a whole bunch of gods, and guess what? Mine is that coffee cup over there, or some goofball thing, you know what I'm saying? But see, once we recognize that there is one who has all power, and whatever our conceptions of him might be, we decide that we're going to have to give ourselves to that power. Give our lives and our will and our lives over that third step thing. And in doing that, as Glenn pointed out, that third step prayer on page 63 is about asking God to bring about some changes in us, not so that we don't hurt so bad. We already presume that we don't want to hurt so bad. We don't got to tell God that. He knows that. Heaven knows we know that. But the third step prayer is that decision to offer our wills and our lives to God so that through us and through the changes he brings about in us, others can see what he can do. And he can do things that we can't do. We can't do them for ourselves. We can't do them for other people. Other people couldn't do them for us. And so on that simple premise, the practical program of action, see, the tremendous fact for every one of us, bottom page 17, we have a way out on which we can absolutely agree. At first it says a common solution, that spiritual idea, a way out on which we can absolutely agree, that one program. And once that takes place, we have individual recovery. And when we have individual recovery, being unified is a piece of cake. Uh-huh. We're unified in the fact that whatever our individual conceptions of God might be, we're unified that we're talking about the sovereign God who created all things, including us. That's what we're talking about. We're unified in that. We're unified in a program of action that applies the spiritual solution to the problem that we have. We call it alcoholism. And we're unified in that program. And once recovery has taken place, that unity presents itself in the fellowship that we share. And as we share together, it says we join together in brotherly and harmonious action, being of service to God and others. And so there's your recovery, unity, and service. And like Chris pointed out, without the recovery at the base of the triangle, there's not going to be any unity. There ain't going to be any service. You just put two self-will run riots together. You get six or seven of them, call them an AA group, watch them bump heads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
I'm glad I'm an alcoholic. I was thinking about that. That paragraph on page 17 where it talks about that we're represented, a representation of all walks of life, political, economic, social, and religious backgrounds. You can't get two alcoholics to agree on any of that stuff.
No.
So without recovery, that's what we're going to talk about and argue about. I've been asked several times about the idea of, I have all these bad motives. Do they ever change? I kept score when I did something for someone else and things like that. And it's only through being willing to serve God and other people that those motives do change. But me, I like things to change overnight. And I struggled with those things and talked to them about my sponsor. And people in turn have asked me about that, and so that's what I tell them. Well, it's a process. God can't change us unless we're willing to do things his way. And so the idea of giving with a bad motive is fine as long as we're doing what God would have us to do. And of course, I say following the directions of our sponsor is the most important thing there, because I could figure out that stuff I had tried before and was miserable trying to give to other people because I always kept score. And I didn't understand that. And the idea of jumping through hoops, too, I had that in mind, too, and I didn't understand that stuff. And I'm grateful understanding is optional, because I didn't. I didn't understand that, how that worked. I'm glad it does. It works good. But it takes the power of God to change us. And slowly but surely, the idea of just to give for that other person comes in. Those bad motives of trying to jump through hoops or trying to, you know, give so they'll give back to me. Those things do change, but it takes time.
Sure.
My name is Jason, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jason.
For years, I thought I was the only person in the world that knew sooner or later I was going to take a drink again, and there's nothing I could do about it. I never thought I'd be able to make that, be able to say that in a meeting. So I was one that was so insecure that a bunch of these people sat down across from me, and they said, well, we're powerless. We screwed up everything we touched. If we didn't have God in our lives, we'd be dead or wet brain if we were lucky, but hopefully we wouldn't live, you know, for several years in misery. We got nothing going for us. And I'm looking at these people, and I'm saying, man, you're actually honest about that kind of stuff, you know. And I know that if you have any kind of an ego at all, you don't like to admit that stuff, but that's what takes me to sit down and tell a new person. You know, I'm always be honest, and I tell them everything. Man, I got nothing going for me. You know what I'm saying? That's why I'm here. I couldn't stay away from alcohol no matter how hard I tried. That just wasn't me. I just came out of alcoholics. When I came out of alcoholics, I was so insecure. So yeah, I had the world on a downhill pull, you know. I was high as a stress, man. I found some change. And don't mind admitting that stuff anymore. I don't mind it, because I know it helps people. I know that I can show that stuff in my own experience. And I know that when I thought I was the only person in the world like me, and somebody sat down across from me and started talking, like, I thought, oh my gosh, this guy, he's like me too, you know. But he wasn't like that anymore, you know. And immediately I thought maybe that was the way out. You know, what in the world did you do to get different from where you was? Because I'm where you was, and I want to get different, you know. And it takes that, it just takes honesty about a person when you're going to carry this message.
So yeah, the one thing about that is that from time to time we'll hear people talk about the power of example. And certainly the power of example is a very strong thing with some of us. And we've all been influenced, or most of us probably been influenced by the power of example at one time or another. But to use that phrase, or use that expression, that term, the power of example, without knowing what we're talking about, we can easily get confused. The power of example here is not that we stopped drinking. The power of example here is what Jason just shared in the face of that hopelessness I'm feeling inside. And having sat here and heard other people talk about that hopelessness that I thought I was the only one in the world who had, I can see there's something different in them. I can see that they have recovered, but I don't know those words yet, so I don't know how to say that. And so here I am, brand new in an AA meeting, feeling hopeless, knowing sooner or later I'm going to drink. Hearing somebody else talk about they used to have that same problem. And I'm shocked that they used to have it. And I'm double shocked to find out they don't have it anymore. So the power of example is not that we're not drinking. That's a moral issue. That's a religious issue. the power of example, the message that we carry, is that we have recovered. And it's not, and I think this ties in with some of what Glenn was saying, it's not we have recovered to say, oh, look what wonderful, spiritual, great people we are. Even though that does fit in some cases. But it's the idea of the power of example and showing other people we have recovered, not so we can tout ourselves. And not necessarily so we can tout God, although that certainly gets done because God gets the credit. But we're sitting here and sharing with others, with new people, in this power of example that we have recovered. There is a solution. There is hope. It's for their sakes, so they can be drawn to it. It's easy to, I've done it, I'm sure others here have done it. It's easy to be talking to a new guy and to point the finger. Do you realize the person you are right now is going to drink again? Oh, you don't? Well, let me show it to you in a book. You know what I'm saying? We just go right here in a book and show it to them. We can do that. See, that's the academics of it. Most of us here know that very well. But to be able to sit here and talk about powerlessness from our own experience, and again, that's some of what Jason was saying, to sit with other people, or better yet, to sit one-on-one with some AA prospect or a prospect for recovery here in AA or however you want to say that, but to sit with that other person who may need what we have and offer it to them, but to begin to do that by sharing, let me tell you, not how miserable I got from drinking, although that'll get mentioned from time to time. But let me share with you what I learned about myself. I found out what it means to be powerless. I found out what it means to be the kind of person who never, ever wants to drink again. And I end up doing it time and time again. And hopefully that person will ask us, man, after that story you just told me about your drinking, all that misery you suffered, how in the world do you stay sober?
I'm Tim. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tim.
It wasn't so much for me hearing your stories about how miserable you were, because I was more concerned about how miserable I'd been. I already knew that. But when I knew I was going to drink, and I had proven that before, I knew I was powerless and I needed some help. But gaining trust in you guys to be able to admit in front of you that I was powerless, and then having to admit that no matter what I tried, it didn't work. And I wanted to give myself to God, but I didn't want to give all of myself to God. And finally got to the point where, you know, I had to tell you guys, you know, I'm ready to, through my heart, I said I give myself all to God. And it was just the repeated of you guys all telling me how powerless you were. And it came to the point where I was talking to several of you one-on-one, and that really helped me a lot, instead of being afraid in front of the whole group. You know, the one-on-one really helped me. That way I could identify a little bit more. You know, I knew I was hopeless, but I still had that feeling that, I was still afraid to admit. It's just the big ego, or pride, or both of them combined. And like it says in the 12 and 12, I'm glad that's over. That's all I have.
Thanks, Tim.